sitting next to the dishwasher. Can you hear it? It's a metal bowl in there that's making this cyclical sound sometimes. See, hear that? It's almost like the sound of bells. What is it? I hear the sound. It's very subtle. I want to hear it. One more time. Sort of here. I don't know. It must be the, all the... This thing, inches away from here, the madness going on inside this dishwasher. Scalding hot water spraying in all directions. But not enough. It's not enough pressure to, like, make all the dishes fly all over the place inside there. You know? Whoever invented the dishwasher is definitely a genius, okay? A total genius. But yeah, I have these metal bowls, especially when I put one of the bigger ones in there, it makes this tring, like, weird sound, you know? Can freak you out when you hear it at times. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not really hearing it. Of course, because I'm trying to record it. I can't hear that weird sound. What's going on in there? Madness. It's madness. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's time to go outside. Let's go outside. All right, we're outside. Here we are. Turn the sound down here. Dishwasher. We don't need that dishwasher level of sound at this point. Yeah, we're here on the overnight skate porch. It's a Monday, July 6th, 2015. It's a beautiful day out. I hear the wind chimes. Breezy, partly cloudy. Pretty cool. Yeah, the past week or so, a little more than a week, it's been this wild time with the Grateful Dead. The Fare Thee Well shows last weekend from Santa Clara, California, and just this past weekend from Chicago. And I got the streaming package, so I watched all five shows on my living room TV set. And it was quite a process, I have to say. Now, the band is not known as the Grateful Dead anymore. They made it kind of hard to figure out what the heck their name was, but I think ultimately the band that performed these shows is called The Dead, which is the name those guys have used for all of the times they've played together. The four main guys, you know, Bob Weir, Phil Lesh, Bill Kreutzmann, and Mickey Hart, the four surviving members of the original lineup. Of course, there are a few more surviving members that were in the band at one point, Tom Constantin and Donna Godshow, for example. And people that were collaborators, I think Bruce Hornsby, who was in this group, was not ever officially a member of the Grateful Dead, though. I don't know. So now, it's after all that. It's like the holiday is over, the Grateful Dead thing is over, and now I'm just sort of facing another week of unemployment. And I applied for another job today. It seemed very hopeful, but I haven't heard anything yet. I'm not having a whole heck of a lot of luck with my job search here. It's getting kind of harrowing and disturbing. I remember the last time it happened where I was unemployed for quite a while was, I think it was right at the beginning of the overnight scape. I think it was in 2003 or 2004 I had an issue with that. And then I became employed and was employed all the way through to just a few months ago. After a while, the feeling of despair starts to seep in through the cracks now and then. I had a little bit of despair over the weekend for a few hours. And then it subsided. I'm glad it subsides because it doesn't feel very good when you have it. You know, despair. You sort of probably visualize it as some sort of gaunt, ghostly character. Despair. You know how they all like to personify all death, despair, loneliness as these characters, you know. Well, even in that movie, that Pixar movie, I didn't see it, Inside Out, you know, personifications of joy and anger and fear and things like that. So what do we got out here? We got some stuff. I actually have some American Beauty Ale, the Grateful Dead beer. I haven't drunk it. I figure I may as well have it now to celebrate the Grateful Dead. The shows were amazing, by the way. I loved it. There were many different streaming packages. I bought it through MLB TV, the Major League Baseball, through their streaming platform, and I bought it many months ago for about $80 for all five shows. And I got a pristine, high def signal, and it was really great. It was really worth it. Talking about the process of it, it was fun. It was just an amazing time, and I will rewatch all those shows. I have 30 days to rewatch them on that. I should just watch all of them. So here we have Grateful Dead American Beauty Imperial Pale Ale. It's one of these large bottles, about the size of like a wine bottle. 9% alcohol by volume. Dogfish Head. Oh, this is that place in Delaware. Okay. And they have the Grateful Dead 50 logo there. An Imperial Pale Ale brewed with almond, honey, granola, and all-American hops. It's called American Beauty. An Imperial Pale Ale inspired by the Grateful Dead. The best way to capture 30 years, more than 100 live albums, 2,300 shows? Let the loyal fans drive the recipe. Among thousands of suggestions, granola was tops. It was the main course in millions of parking lot meals and is a sweet and toasty complement to the all-American hops and barley. There was something different about a Dead show. Whether you saw one or 100, you felt it. If only you could have bottled it. You know, I've noticed that. What kind of bug is this? Strange little bug, weird little translucent bug crawling on the table. Like there's this magical otherness listening to the Grateful Dead. Now, I've never been to one of their shows ever. I just have been listening, online to the shows. But I certainly can recognize it. Though people have said that that sense of magic you get is stronger if you actually go to the shows. I think that the Grateful Dead is definitely very misunderstood because there's a relatively large barrier to entry. And it's very strange the way I got into them. I mean, I basically was a Fish fan. A guy I worked with, his cousin was a big Fish fan, but also a Grateful Dead fan, but brought in a lot of Fish CDs for us to listen to back in the 90s, and I got to really like Fish. And again, I've never gone to a show, but I know pretty much all of their music. I'm a pretty big fan of Fish. Then I started getting into the Grateful Dead, you know, online on the archive. You can listen to all the shows. And for about 10 years, I listened in a kind of a light way, in a way that was not very intense. But I got to know a lot of the songs, and I liked it, but I just didn't love it. And then it was very strange. Just 6 months ago or so, they announced this Fare Thee Well shows as the goodbye, you know, celebrating 50 years. And I started getting much deeper into the Grateful Dead, much, much, much deeper, which involves listening just to tons of shows, and pretty much just the shows. I mean, the studio albums don't really seem to factor into it. I tried listening to them a little bit, and I do want to, as I continue my Grateful Dead research, I do want to listen to all the studio albums, but that's really not what it's about. It's about listening to shows. So basically, archive.org has pretty much all their shows to listen to for free. And also to download for free, and some of them you have to get certain plugins to download it because of some weird legal wranglings or whatever, but yeah, you can just listen to everything. Also, there's a lot of resources online. I've been going to the subreddit on Reddit for Grateful Dead. I'm getting a lot of information, reading lots of magazines and websites about it. And the thing is, there's so much information out there. I was on a crash course this year with the Grateful Dead and just basically probably got the basics down. But there's still, it's like a bottomless pit of information, of ideas, of songs, of legends, of everything else. Now, first of all, there's a few aspects. First of all is the music itself. The songs are incredible. They have literally hundreds of really, really great songs. That, you know how you listen to a band from the 60s, let's say, or the 70s, and some of them have this sound that's sounds dated. Well, I have to say, the Grateful Dead songs are very timeless. Then there's that aspect of what seems to be relatively unique with the Grateful Dead is that they were attempting to open up another place, pull back the curtains of this reality to show another reality. Now, I know a lot of people, obviously indelibly interlaced with the whole Grateful Dead thing is the psychedelic drugs, which I've never partaken in. I'm very innocent in that regard. I've led a very sheltered existence. But the idea that with our perceptions, we're able to perceive things beyond the here and now, to other worlds and other types of perceptions. It seems that the Grateful Dead, in their music, invoke or try to spark a flame of some kind of perception of another place, which I certainly have experienced many times listening to their music, and people say that when you're at the shows, that is much greater, that perception. So you might see a bunch of jerky-looking hippie people dancing around looking like idiots, but they're perceiving something that maybe that you've never perceived. Not just because of all the drugs they're on, but because this music is meant to do it. And they even say that it's meant to do that. The music is meant to do this. Now, how and why did this happen? Well, I mean, I've talked about it a lot in the past, that there's a lot of suspicious occurrences in their early days, and the people they were associated with were certainly potentially associated with a lot of the occult practitioners of the time. I don't think that would be any shock to anyone that there's an occult aspect to it. It seems that they're doing some sort of magic ritual in their music, which does not necessarily mean that it's bad. I mean, there's black magic and white magic, right? I don't know what that exactly means, but it seems what they're doing is good. I mean, I think I'd be very, very sensitive to this kind of thing, and I don't think that what they're doing is bad. Though there's a lot of mysterious stuff associated with them. So those are the two things. First, this transcendent nature of the music, which is hard to talk about because it's hard to really describe it. It sounds stupid. It sounds like sort of a new age crap that people are making up, but it's not. I can tell you from my own experience that there's a transcendent quality to the music that I have not perceived in any other kind of music, really, to that degree. And then the songs themselves, which, they all have a certain tone and a certain... They're all very different, but they all gravitate towards a single, I think, sort of a single center, which is something about... sort of America's past as kind of a lost world to explore. A lot of songs, talking about, characters and situations. They sing a lot of, country western songs and blues songs, things like that. And there's a lot of folk song elements, a lot of references. Robert Hunter is the main lyricist, just incredibly evocative. And in that way, that's why they are such a deeply American band, because they've sort of tapped into these strange, bizarre histories and tropes and trends and thoughts of America as a very sort of mysterious place in a lot of ways. So their music does not sound dated in the least. It always sounds completely fresh and completely new. And as much as I've gotten into so many different bands and got to know all their songs and everything, I think a good example is Fish. They have tons and tons of really great songs, but once I got into the Grateful Dead, I realized, I still like Fish, but the Grateful Dead's on a whole other level. But it took a long time. I had to listen to these songs 5, 10, 15, 20 times before I finally break through and get the song. Some songs, like the song Wharf Rat, I must have heard it like dozens of times and kind of didn't get it. And then finally when I got it, I'm like, oh my God, this is an incredible song. I'm very happy that I've gone down this road this year because I think it's sort of like what they sing about. It's a mysterious, sort of quintessentially American phenomenon, the Grateful Dead themselves. They inhabit a space that's very much not... You can't really pin it down. I mean, their song U.S. Blues, which they sang as their encore on the July 4th show, is not particularly patriotic. I mean, there's certainly a cynical element to the song. Wave that flag, you know. I'm Uncle Sam, been hiding out in a rock and roll band. You know, talking about Charlie Chan and, you know, sort of this, the image from the Grateful Dead movie of this skeleton wearing an Uncle Sam outfit. It's not, like, trying to trash America, and it's really not kind of blindly patriotic. It's just in a very weird place, and you see this a lot. I mean, there's a lot of this with the Grateful Dead. It's obviously they're sort of hippie-ish guys. They're pretty liberal. I know they think they supported Obama. You know, they support, you know, marijuana legalization, whatever else. But it's not like a very, it's never been a very political band in any way. And they're able to sort of straddle this weird place. Now, this is what else makes the band great. Not just great songs and not just the transcendent nature of the music, but just sort of where their music sits in our culture. They have found this place where the music is timeless, fascinating, endlessly fascinating, endlessly, you know, the emotional content and the narrative content of the songs are just endlessly engaging. And, again, where they sit in terms of America and our American society is very, very unique. And again, I don't really know how they achieved this, but they did. And even this event that happened this past 2 weekends is a great testament to all that. Let me have some of this beer here. Is that hair on the inside or the outside of the glass? Ah, get out. Why is there a hair in there? Some ale. I think all I like is ale. I don't think I like beer. I almost thought they were the same, but I guess they're different. I guess it's all about, I mean, it's all about the pale ale these days, right? India pale ale, Imperial pale ale. It's all about the pale ale, baby. Big foamy head here. Smells really good. I may have to save this bottle because it has this really cool artwork of the you know, the skeleton wearing roses in its head. And yeah, so those are all very occult symbols from different occult traditions. I don't know, Rosicrucians or Masons, or God only knows. Obviously, there's a lot of that going on, which may be how they achieved what they achieved and some connection with that other world out there. I don't know. It seems like there may be something. I don't know. It's all very puzzling. I thought the foamy head go down a little bit. So, this is how you watch. Basically, you go onto the website, mlb.com/whatever dead50. You click on a button, and it says, you know, the stream will start soon. Now, to the consternation of many, myself included, mlb.com, is, or mlb.tv, rather, is the Major League Baseball. They basically own and operate the infrastructure to stream baseball games. As you know, there's multiple baseball games every day during baseball season. Stream it to people. So they have a very robust infrastructure. Now, I have a Roku, and it has the MLB TV app on there. Now, I sort of assumed, as many people did, that I would be able to just watch The Grateful Dead on my Roku. Sorry about that. Nope. Computer only. Desktop computer only. So, you know, it was a bit of a pain, but every night I had to carry my computer into the living room, set it on top of the, you know, I have a laptop, set it on top of the cable box, and plug in the HDMI cable from my Roku, and then you're good. The first night, I forgot to plug the laptop in, so I start watching the first Santa Clara show, and the computer goes off. And with this computer, it takes like 20 minutes for it to come back on, and everything back normal so I can restream it. And then I did it again on the 4th of July. I forgot to plug the computer in, and I missed 20 minutes of the show, including me and my uncle. Me and my uncle went riding down South Colorado, West Texas bound, and left his dead ass there by the side of the road. Yeah. So you plug it in, and you just watch the show. So basically there was a 5-hour block allotted for each show. So the Santa Clara shows, I think one of the shows started at 8, which meant it started at 7, which means it started at 10 here. They usually don't get started till a half hour in, So it was 10:30 when they started playing. Then they play about an hour. Then they have an hour break, which I didn't realize at first they were going to have this hour break. And then they play on until about that five-hour mark. So about 3 hours a night, maybe a little more, maybe a little less each night. And during the intermission, there was this special music that was commissioned. 5 hours of intermission music that's sort of evocative of Grateful Dead songs without actually being Grateful Dead songs, like they're using the same chords and things. And showing a lot of psychedelic imagery and pictures of the band, all seemingly very random, but it was very cool. You know, you could take that break. Then they would come back, and it's very interesting. I think that what the band did is they really tried to keep these shows very much as if they were original Grateful Dead shows. For example, there was a lot of talk about guests, like would Donna, who's still alive, Donna Godshaw, would she come as a guest? Also, Tom Constantin, would he be a guest? They also were also talking about Branford Marsalis, I guess, who played with them a bunch of times. In the end, there were no guests. And I think that was the better thing. It was basically these guys, these, seven guys, right? So it's Bob Weir as the rhythm guitarist, Phil Lesh as bassist, the drummers, Mickey and Bill, and of course the keyboardist, the organ player, Jeff Comenti, who I thought looked a little bit like me if I had long gray hair. And he's young. He's younger than me, too. He's like the youngest guy in the band. And then, of course, Bruce Hornsby. You may remember him from Bruce Hornsby and the Range. I think he had a song called That's Just the Way It Is. Some things will never change, right? And, of course, Trey Anastasio from Phish, who, of all of them, was perhaps the most controversial character to be in this Fare Thee Well. Let me have some of this beer. Finally, I can drink some beer. American Beauty. I sort of do taste granola in there. Ah, nice. I'll have some beer. This is a big bottle, and it's 9% alcohol. There's going to be a lot of alcohol in this, theoretically. So basically they did not have any guest stars. I mean, there was one guy during drums on, I think, the second night, this black guy that was there playing drums, but other than that, there was not any star. So they basically don't get corny. They don't talk about. They don't really talk very much, to the audience. They all wear whatever clothes they would wear that day. Normally, they wear very. This is what they've always done. They wear their normal street clothes. It's all about the music, you know. They come out, and it's not like a big fanfare. And then they start playing immediately. They come out, start tuning their instruments, and when they're ready, they just start playing a song. It just sort of fades in, you know. It's the music. It's all about the music, which is extraordinary. So they were very, I would say, very tasteful in that regard. They kept it very simple, very simple. I mean, they talk at the end. I mean, but the set break, Bob Weir says, "We'll be back in just a minute. We'll be back in just a little while," you know, and. Then at the end, Phil Lesh, I mean, this is not something from the original band, but he got a transplant, so he has to do the donor rap. He has to ask people to become organ donors. I'm sure that was one of the conditions for his, being part of it. And a few guys said a few things at the end. At the very, very end, you know, Mickey Hart came out, and he's like, you know, this amazing feeling we have, take it with you, and I have one thing to leave you with. Please, be kind, you know. And that right there is kind of the golden rule, put into two words, be kind, you know. So, you know, when we talk about all this, the occult origins and the aspects of them, I mean, I think a message like be kind, that's my own message, you know. Like, it's not complicated. And it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but the message, you know, you have this religion, Christianity. What did Jesus say? He said, basically, be kind. That's it. Two words. None of these other incredible rules and people you're supposed to hate and people you're not supposed to, like, no, be kind, right? Like, it's so freaking simple. You're a person. You like other people to be nice to you. Well, who are these other people? You realize that you're another person to other people. The other people want people to be nice to them. You as another person could be nice to them. If everyone is kind, then we have the world that we want. So, I mean, but I think that that's important. I think that's sort of like a really powerful expression. Who else says that, you know, an expression? And it's not maudlin, it's not saccharine, it's not... I think it's very heartfelt. Yeah, so the shows themselves were great. The set lists were great. I mean, of course, I spent 6 months really digging deep, learning their songs. And even so, there were a few songs that I didn't know very well at all, a few songs that I knew okay, and some that I knew, of course, very well. I want to go over the set list to just... talk about some of these songs. And I do feel kind of like when I realized that there were people that I knew that, hold on, I got an email here about a job. Oh, you have your own laptop. For God's sakes. A Mac laptop. I don't like Mac. Don't you have your own Mac laptop? Hold on, let me get my thing up here. No? No? No. Yes. 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 Here it is. Okay. Yeah, when I remember back in 87 making that movie The Evil Form with my friends, and this one kid, Sleeper, his nickname was Sleeper, and he was a big Deadhead, and another guy that was around that time, this guy Chris Weigart, he was a huge Deadhead, and I just ignored all of it. I could have gone to those shows in the later 80s. I mean, those were some of the best shows, apparently. So last weekend, you had the first show in Santa Clara, June 27th. They started off with Truckin', which, you know, people that don't like the Dead or don't know about them, oh, what is that, Truckin'? You know, sort of what everyone knows. Then they did Uncle John's Band. And then they got into some older songs, Alligator, which, very rare song. They would hardly... play that. They played that in the early days. It was a Pigpen song. Pigpen was one of the guys that died in the band. He was the a lead singer, organ player, and harmonica player. He died in 73. He actually dated Janis Joplin for a while, and also Janis Joplin performed with the Grateful Dead a few times. Turn on Your Love Light, one song particularly. I don't know what's going on here. My phone's going ape shit. It's like it stopped. Holy shit. Why? I'm trying to read something off of this and it's just dying. Okay, so basically Alligator, Cumberland Blues, a song that they actually repeated in Chicago. Good song. Some of these are covers, you know, Born Cross-Eyed. That's a song I don't know very well. Cream Puff War, again, that's a really rare song. They only played a few times early on. Viola Lee Blues also is an early song. Cryptical Envelopment is kind of the first part of the other one. And then Dark Star. So this second set in Santa Clara on the first day was basically the big super jam. Cryptical Envelopment, Dark Star, St. Stephen, The Eleven, Turn on Your Love Light, Drums, Space, What's Become of the Baby, which they only performed once in their entire career, The Other One, and Morning Dew, and then the encore was Casey Jones. So that basically was like, it was sort of bookended by their two biggest hits, you know, obviously besides Touch of Grey, and then really a deep dive into their real early stuff. It was really amazing. Turn on Your Love Light is a cover song. This guy Bobby Bland did the original, but they often would do like a half hour with Pigpen doing these improvised lyrics. Now, wait a minute. I want you to turn to the person on your left or the person on your right. You just have to hear it. It's really great when he does it. Yeah, he died in 73. And then every show they have Drums and Space. I'm not sure exactly when they started this, but basically Drums is the two drummers doing drumming and weird sound effects. In fact, on the last show, Mickey Hart had a freight train horn, you know, like, and he played that. And they asked him about it afterwards. He's like, well, it sort of represents the trains leaving the station, you know, sort of like, fare thee well, you know. And then they do Space, which is more less drums and more weird sound effects and stuff. I don't know when they started that, but they did that every single one of these shows, which was their tradition for many, many years. I don't know if it started in the 80s at some point. That was the first night. It was amazing. Trey Anastasio is just incredible. But his main role was as the lead guitarist. He just nailed it. He hit it out of the park. I mean, apparently he was saying he was practicing 10 hours a day for just the past 6 months. These songs and the guitar work you need to do all the solos and all of the jamming is, I mean, truly, truly a monumental task. And he did it amazingly, and everyone was hugely fond of his work. He did great. People were questioning it, but he did a fantastic job sort of channeling Jerry Garcia. And, you know, because the whole idea is Jerry Garcia died 20 years ago. The last show they played was in Chicago. That was the whole point of this whole thing. I haven't talked a lot about Jerry Garcia, but he was basically the main guy in the band, you know, the main force in the band, even though there were many forces in the band. So Trey, from that first night, you knew he was going to be amazing. He sang a few songs, too, and I'm a big fan of Fish, which is his band, and I loved everything he did. I loved this entire thing. It was fantastic, and I can't wait to re-listen to it, re-watch it, everything else. So the next day in Santa Clara, they started off with I Feel Like a Stranger, New Minglewood Blues, Brown-Eyed Women, Loose Lucy, which is a little bit more of a obscure later song, I think. Loser, great song. Road Jimmy, Alabama Getaway, which Trey sang. Black Peter, Hell in a Bucket, Mississippi Half Step, Uptown Toodaloo, where they mention Rock and Rye, of course. Wharf Rat, Eyes of the World, He's Gone. Drums, Space, I Need a Miracle, Death Don't Have No Mercy. I think I fell asleep at that point. Sugar Magnolia, and Broke Down Palace, which that's a song I still am working on getting, Broke Down Palace. I know I will eventually, though. So those two shows, that was last weekend. Just amazing. And then knowing that this weekend was coming, it was an amazing week. It was this Grateful Dead time period that's now over with. So the first show was Friday in Chicago, starting with Box of Rain. That's Phil's song. Jack Straw, Bertha, Passenger, The Wheel, Crazy Fingers. The Music Never Stopped. I love that song, by the way. Mason's, and yeah, when I heard that song and Donna wasn't there, I knew Donna wasn't going to be there. That's a big song for Donna. Mason's Children, very obscure song. Scarlet Begonias, Fire in the Mountain. Again, that's one of their, those two songs paired together, one of their biggest, for the fans, that's one of their most important songs. Drum Space, New Potato Caboose playing in the band. Let It Grow, Help on the Way. Slipknot, Franklin's Tower, and encore was Ripple, which that's another song that I've been getting more and more into is Ripple. But of course I love Help on the Way, Slipknot, Franklin's Tower. Those three songs sort of played together. Then on the 4th of July you had Shakedown Street, Liberty, more of an obscure song. I like all the songs, you know. Standing on the Moon, Me and My Uncle, Tennessee Jed, Cumberland Blues, Little Red Rooster, Friend of the Devil, Deal, Birdsong, Golden Road to Unlimited Devotion, which they barely ever played live, and that was the first song in their first studio album. Lost Sailor, Scene of Circumstance, West LA Fadeaway, great song. Foolish Heart, Drum Space, Stella Blue, One More Saturday Night, and the encore was U.S. Blues, where they actually had the Empire State Building here in New York, had a light show on it that was synchronized with them playing out in Chicago. And as I was saying, I think that in a lot of ways they are a more deeply American band than any band that sort of pays lip service to being American or patriotic or whatever. You know, I mean, there's something very deeply American about the Grateful Dead. And the final show started with, you know, this at this point, I was reading on, and as I was watching the shows, I was on my phone reading Reddit. There was a post for each show, and just reading everyone's comments about it gave me a lot more sort of flavor about what people were thinking about it, what the songs were, everything else. So it was great. If you think about it, it's sort of a new way of watching a concert, sitting at home, watching a live stream, reading internet comments on your phone. I couldn't read them on my computer. The computer was being used to stream. So at this point, there was a lot of big songs that they knew they had to play. So China Cat, Sunflower, and I Know You Rider, which go together. We knew that was coming. Estimated Profit, Built to Last. Built to Last, I love that song, and they didn't play it very much. It's a later song. Samson and Delilah, Mountains of the Moon. When they started playing Mountains of the Moon, I've been fairly obsessed with that song the past couple months. When they went on Playboy After Dark in 1969, that was one of the songs they played. Very rare song for them to play. Throwing Stones, amazing. And then the final set, Truckin', Cassidy, Althea. Everyone wanted Althea. It's a great song. I think Trey sang that too, right? Terrapin Station, that was another one everyone knew had to be coming. Drums, Space, Unbroken Chain, Days Between, Not Fade Away. I think I fell asleep at that point. I have to rewatch that. the encore was Touch of Grey and then Addicts of My Life. And for the Chicago shows, they had this is some guy from CNN or something do a post show, which was very cringe-inducing, but it had some interesting information. Mountain Girl was on the last night. She was Jerry Garcia's wife. Her name is Mountain Girl. It's awesome. She was one of the Merry Pranksters back in the day. When it ended, they all took a bow, and you know, he talked about being kind and filled the donor wrap, and then they sort of did a post interview with Bob Weir and Mickey Hart, and Bob Weir's like, "Well, there's stuff coming." They're trying to say like this is the end of the whole thing, but it really isn't. These guys all have their own side projects, and they're going to continue playing Grateful Dead music. I think in this case, you know, this was a huge hyped event, and you had Trey from Phish, and he will not be involved in this anymore. He's going to be going on tour with Phish next month. So this was a magical moment. It will continue on, of course. I think there will always be Grateful Dead bands. I mean, if you're in the year 3000, there probably are still Grateful Dead cover bands out there. Am I right? Year 3000? Maybe not. But yeah, this I mean, it was a moment that they were trying to say it's the end. I mean, you could say it ended 20 years ago when Jerry died, and they did tons of shows, the four of them together, as the Dead, up until I think 2009, and never with this kind of fanfare. I think this was an incredible success. I'm so happy that I got involved with it, and you, of course, if you missed it, you could, of course, catch up. But it wouldn't really mean much to watch the shows without really knowing the songs that well. And, you know, even myself, I certainly can't claim to be a major Deadhead. I mean, obviously I came to it very late, and I'm trying to understand everything, but I'm getting into it to a degree. I know there's probably people that are very much like, you're not a real Deadhead because you weren't into it back then or whatever, you know. I don't really care if I am or not a Deadhead. I don't really care. I just have been so engaged and interested in this whole thing, and something that's been largely sort of, like I said, there's a huge barrier to entry, which is that you need to immerse yourself in this music for many months to even begin to get into it. Who's going to do that? Especially because, you know, I have to say that in those 6 months, I've been listening to just the music. I've been listening to music, a few videos here and there of the band, but you're not really seeing a lot of those people. I think generally it's the fans, the Deadheads, that are the biggest turnoff to people, right? Because they seem to be kind of like, I don't know, like, there was a thing that happened for like a year in the 1960s, in 1967, where there was a hippie thing that happened, and then it died. On that Playboy After Dark, they talked about the death of the hippie. In 69, they talked about that. That these people are sort of desperately trying to recapture that and have a certain look, wearing tie-dyed shirts and stuff, and it seems kind of like maybe they're grasping on to something that doesn't really exist, or they're all rich, you know, they're rich people that are indulging in this kind of slumming as hippies or whatever you want to say. I don't know. I don't really know anyone like that. I really don't know that many people that are into the Grateful Dead besides myself. And, you know, I feel kind of neutral towards them. I don't really like or dislike the Deadhead look, tone, and feel. It's not something that appeals to me per se on a huge level, but it's the music that appeals to me on a major level. But I think also a lot of our society has to do with, you know, your self-image, you know. How will you feel about yourself if you drive this car? How will you feel about yourself if you wear this watch, right? So it's sort of like, how will you feel about yourself if you're a Deadhead? How will people view you if you're a Deadhead? You know, it's like this weird corporate self-identity thing of, like, what are you, you know? Try on this music fandom. Try on this, you know. Can't be a man because he doesn't smoke same cigarettes as me. I can't get no, you know. So yeah, that part of it, I know that's what really catches on most people is that aspect of it. And then I guess there's also the drug aspect, which I for whatever reason, I never got into that scene at all. Again, I'm sort of ambivalent towards the idea of, you know, these drugs. I support, you know, legalization of, you know, marijuana or whatever else, and I'm sure that psychedelic drugs are great. I don't know. I don't know why I never got into anything like that. As I said, I lived a very sheltered existence. I don't feel a strong need to go out and try to experience that. But I think people might also, that also might turn people off in terms of the Grateful Dead. I kind of ignore that aspect of it.
Grateful Dead ale.
Yum, yum.
Grateful Dead ale. And it was
at the end of each Chicago show, they had these music videos, which were sort of these collaborative projects. The second one was, I think it was playing in the band. It was all these different random people around the world playing the music. And then Jimmy Buffett was in there singing the song. He was in Montauk. Don't want to talk about a weird occult place. He was in Montauk, New York, singing a few verses of the song along with David Crosby. Separately, but I talked about that's sort of something similar to the Deadheads, the Parrotheads, these fans of Jimmy Buffett. I really wonder if anyone would claim that Jimmy Buffett's music has any of these qualities that I've been talking about with Grateful Dead music. I really don't think so. I don't think so. That, I think, is the most disturbing fandom I've ever seen, is this Jimmy Buffett thing, these Parrotheads, Margaritaville, all that stuff. But it's interesting because both the Deadheads and the Parrotheads, they basically gravitate towards something which I would call a sort of a gentle hedonism, that people just want to live sort of a relaxed, calm, pleasant, pleasurable existence. Drinking, in the case of the Parrotheads, drinking frozen cocktails on a boat. In the case of the Deadheads, taking LSD and smoking pot in a field somewhere in California. I don't know, And I do think that trope or that archetype of someone that's a gentle hedonist that enjoys the pleasures of life but is also very gentle and peaceful and kind is kind of a interesting trope, and kind of an appealing character. I think a lot of people aspire towards that's all they want, that's all they want to be around, which I think is admirable in some ways. It's interesting. Now, the Grateful Dead is something that existed long before the Grateful Dead as a band. It's basically a class of folklore, folk tales from the distant past. And there's actually, I found a book on Google Books from 1907. It's all about the Grateful Dead. If I can find this here. I have a link to the book for myself, if I can look at this. So I want to read you the introduction, because it's very interesting what Grateful Dead is. And apparently, the guys in the band were sitting around in some sort of dictionary or folklore dictionary and came upon the term Grateful Dead. And that's why they named the band. But it's very interesting to see a book from 1907 all about the Grateful Dead. Come on, load up. I have, no internet here. What happened? Load up, please. It's dying. It's died. What is going on? Oh, here it is. Okay. Let me try this. Yeah, it's called The Grateful Dead, History of a Folk Story, 1907. Now, this I don't think was the book that they were looking at, but this definitely is about that same thing. So it's from 1907, so it's sort of written in a weird style, but let me just read you the introduction, because this is where the term Grateful Dead comes from. The combination of narrative themes is so frequent a phenomenon in folk and formal literature that one almost forgets to wonder at it. Yet in point of fact, the reason for it and the means by which it is accomplished are mysteries past our present comprehension. If we could learn how and where popular tales unite, if we could formulate any general principle of union or severance, we should be well on the way to an understanding of the riddle which has hitherto baffled all students of narrative, namely the diffusion of stories. We have theories enough. Our immediate need is for more studies of individual themes. careful and, if must be, elaborate discussions of many well-known cycles. Happily, these are accumulating and give promise of much useful knowledge at no distant day. One principle has become clear. Since motives are so frequently found in combination, it is essential that the complex types be analyzed and arranged with an eye kept single, nevertheless, to the master theme under discussion. Collectors, both primary and subsidiary, have done such valiant service that the treasures at our command are amply sufficient for such studies. So extensive, indeed, that the task of going through them thoroughly has become too great for the unassisted student. It cannot be strongly urged that a single theme in its various types and compounds must be made predominant in any useful comparative study. This is true when the sources and analogs of any literary work are treated. It is even truer when the bare motive is discussed. So far, this is a very dry academic text, right? You know, sort of talking about literary analysis. But The Grateful Dead furnishes an apt illustration of the necessity of such handling. It appears in a variety of different combinations, almost never alone. Indeed, it is so widespread a tale, and its combinations are so various, that there is the utmost difficulty in determining just what may properly be regarded as the origin kernel of it, the simple theme to which other motives were joined. And I would say that this discussion of the origins of the Grateful Dead story, which the next paragraph will talk about what is the Grateful Dead story, as being this mystery of the past, I'm kind of saying, like, that's sort of the theme of the music, the mysteries of the American past. Interesting, right? I mean, these stories are European and go back hundreds of years, but various opinions, as we shall see, have been held with reference to this matter, most of them justified perhaps by the materials in the hands of the scholars holding them, but not quite adequate in view of later evidence. The true way to solve the riddle appears to be this. We must ask the question, what is the residuum, wow, look at that word, residuum, of the tale? What is the residuum when the tale is stripped of elements not common to a very great majority of the versions belonging to the cycle? What is left amounts to the following. The story reduced to its lowest terms, I take it. Here is the Grateful Dead story. A man finds a corpse lying unburied, and out of pure philanthropy procures interment for it at a great personal inconvenience. Later, he is met by the ghost of the dead man, who in many cases promises him help on condition of receiving in return half of whatever he gets. The hero obtains a wife or some other reward, and when called upon is ready to fulfill his bargain as to sharing his possessions. Nowhere does a version appear in quite this form, but from what follows, it will be seen that the simple story must have proceeded along some such lines. The compounds in which it occurs show much variety. It will be necessary to study these in detail, not merely one or two of them, but as many as can be found. Despite the bewildering complexities that may arise, I hope that this method of approach may throw some new light on the wanderings of the tale. And then it gives acknowledgments to various other academics. So basically, I thought that would be more interesting to read that that part. So basically, this is a type of story that I personally have never heard a story like that. But apparently back in Europe hundreds of years ago, people that would tell these folk tales, it always was about a traveler who goes to a town. And he only had 2 gold coins left, and he finds a body lying in the street, and he says, why is this body in the street? He's like, well, this man died and did not pay the undertaker the 2 gold coins it would have taken to bury him properly. And the man, through pure kindness, says, I feel, even though I never knew this man, I would like to have his body buried properly. Here are the 2 gold coins. Please bury his body properly. And then later, the ghost of the man comes, visits him, and helps him. But there's some sort of like, I didn't know about the part where the ghost wants to take half of the earnings of the various things, you know? So I guess it's strange because, like I said, I personally never heard those kind of stories. it must have been, it was another world, it was another time, sort of like in Croatia in the 1716 or something, you know. People were like gathered around the campfire in Croatia, whatever that would have been like. Now thou shalt tell thou a story. The man was walking into a town, and the townsfolk, a dead body there was in the street. You know, like, and everyone's sitting around, oh, wow, I think I've heard this before. Oh, this is one of those Grateful Dead stories. So I think it's interesting that that's, I didn't know that. I mean, I did not know that story about the Grateful Dead folktale. Not just, it's not just one folktale, it's just so many folktales that have this, like, it could be a whole, like, this book talks about there's all these different stories, and then part of it is the guy goes to a town, there's a dead body in the street, and he pays his 2 gold coins, and he gets the body buried, and in the midst of this other story where all this other stuff is happening, you know, then later on, the ghost of the man comes back, and, you know what I mean? I never knew about any of that stuff. Really weird. It is kind of an odd story, but it makes sense, right? The dead guy being a ghost is grateful that this other guy helped bury his body properly. Ooh. You know? Hence, Grateful Dead. And I remember really being really young and hearing about Grateful Dead. I'm like, what does that mean? They're glad to be dead? That's what it sort of seems like on the surface, right? That, like someone hated their life and they're grateful to be dead. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that at all. Not that at all in any way, shape, or form. It's, and I think they said some of it, like the spendthrift night, was one of the themes. I don't know. I think in some cases, like someone that lost all their money due to you know, selfish pursuits, you know, gambling, whoring, drinking, etc. Is that the proper term? Whoring? I don't know. Use of hookers, and then in the end, did one good deed and was paid back for it. The idea of, you know, that you sort of, by doing a good deed, you may not know that you're going to get any kind of result or nothing good, but you may actually get a good thing from doing a good deed. Does that make any sense? I don't know. I don't know if it makes any sense. I don't know. The Grateful Dead. There's some more ale here. Hey, Mr. Jesse. Here's Mr. Jesse the cat. I'm going to write down a few things here. Oh, yeah, and one of the nights, I think it was Friday night, I'm like, you know, I should try to, I don't have any drugs, but what do I have that's the most drug-like? And I'm like, oh, I have some absinthe. You know, that potentially slightly psychedelic drink. So I drank some absinthe, but really nothing happened for the second set of Friday night. I tried to be sort of like druggy to a degree, and it just didn't work. What else do we have here? Yeah, talking about the 4th of July. Of course, when I was a kid, we had the bicentennial, 200 years. And I always thought about the next one, the 300-year one, tercentennial or tricentennial. I think it's tercentennial, but tri sounds better. You know, biplane, triplane, bicentennial, tricentennial. And I always realized that, you know, I'd have to be 100 and whatever, 9 years old or something to 108 to get there. And I'm, yeah, probably not going to have. But I just realized that the 250th is coming up. Now, I remember how big the bicentennial was in this country. What is the 250th, which is coming up on July 4th, 2026, which is just 11 years from now? 11 years. What was 11 years ago? 11 years ago was 2004, right? So 2026 sounds like a very futuristic date, but it's just 11 years from now. How old will I be? I'll be, in 11 years, I'll be 50. I'm 47 now. I'll be 58. Wow. And the sestercentennial. That's what there's a bunch of names it could be called. The United States sestercentennial. Now, of course, that assumes the United States is still existent. That I think it probably will be. In most timelines, the United States will still exist. July 4th, 2026. The sestercentennial. Kind of sounds like a jerky name, like a siesta. should be the siesta centennial. Just go to sleep. Take a nap when America is 250 years old. Sesta Centennial. That seems to be the preferred name for 250. But we could all be around for that, right? The American Sesta Centennial. But that doesn't sound good. So there's other names. I found an article that talked about other names for 250. One of them is the semi-quincentennial. And that doesn't really ring very well, right? Doesn't really roll off the tongue. The semi-quincentennial. Then there was another one. I don't even know if I can pronounce this. Bicentquinquagenar. The Bicentquinquagenar. And then probably the quarter millennial. The United States quarter millennial. That is probably sounds the best. Quarter millennial. 1/4 of 1,000 years. United States. Quarter millennial celebration. I think that's the one that's going to be there. If I am not mistaken, we will have the quarter millennial as opposed to sester centennial. Sester sounds like incest, you know? Sester centennial? Doesn't sound good. The quarter millennial. So we'll all be there. You'll see you in 11 years at the sester, the quarter millennial, United States of America. I'm sure. I know we all think like, oh, America will be destroyed by then, and this. But you know, think about it. 2004 to now, nothing. That's like a, like it just happened. You know, what the hell. The Overnightscape's been in existence for in that time. 2026. What the hell, man. Hopefully, I will have found a job by then. Hopefully, by 2026. Hopefully, I will find a job. Dear Lord, what's going on with this crap? I need a job. I need a job. Anyway, talking about the past, I started a new experiment called Onsug Saloon. Onsug Saloon. And I could swear there's a video game where a character says something like that. I think it's King of Fighters with that guy Maxima. He's like a big robot guy. I think he's like, Onsug Saloon. Or it's, I think it's Vapor Cannon. Vapor Cannon. Vapor Cannon. He like punches you with like a giant fist. Vapor Cannon. I like Onsug Saloon. So what is Onsug Saloon? Basically, you know, I have endless experiments with the Onsug here. Onsug, the Overnight Escape Underground. I have endless experimentation. What do you want to say? It's this thing that's been going on for years and years, and it's always, like, remained very obscure, and I want to figure out ways of making it relevant for more people, and I don't know. But anyway, I just did the archive. Doing this archive takes hours upon hours upon hours. For June, last month, June 2015, and we did 76 tracks, totaling 5 days of audio, 120 hours. That's like 4 hours a day, every day. A lot of audio. Massive amounts of audio. Now, you know, this archive now, so basically 6,606 tracks. Yes, it's like 666 now. But don't worry, they changed the number of the beast to 616 a few years ago, so don't worry about that. 6606. 9.2 months at this point. 9.3 months. I mean, we're way past the 9-month mark in the audio. So, massive archive, 6,600 shows, 9 months of audio. What the hell? What can you do with it? What can anyone do with it? It's like this imposing thing. How could you even begin to examine it? And a few months ago, I did publish the book, Onsug Guide, which lists every single show with a checklist. And as you know, a few months ago, I did a project called The Night Pool, where I split that archive up into 5-minute segments and then played those randomly. That was real interesting and real cool. And I stopped that project in a way just because I felt like, you know, I've been listening to them and I just felt like, you know, I was adding another 16 hours of stuff to each month. And I had already produced 16 hours of that stuff. No, more than 16 hours. I did 16 episodes, 4 hours each, whatever that is. 64 hours. I liked the Night Pool. I just sort of felt like enough is enough. Like, I'm just, you know, we're producing so much stuff. There's only so much people can listen to. But it showed that it was really interesting drifting through the archive, taking 5-minute bits here, 5-minute bits there. Really fascinating. And sort of like a Grateful Dead show, sort of going from being really engaging and interesting to being kind of, you know, not working. And that's what I didn't really say about the Grateful Dead. A lot of their performances, things aren't working and things aren't perfect, but then somehow they get back into that groove again. So I've had a streaming station which can accommodate 50 listeners for many years now. It was very cheap. I initially got it for, I got it for Night Station, the original Night Station. Then I shut it off. Then I bought it again. And for about a year, I have been doing what's called the Sneaky TT Zodiac, just random clips from the other side. In fact, there was one person listening in St. Louis, Missouri, almost 24 hours a day for like a year. Are you out there? Who are you? I felt kind of bad changing it, being that this person has been listening to it. And that was my hope, that people would listen to this endless stream of music and audio clips. But only one person seemed to be listening. So I used the same stream, so I didn't have to spend any money. And I put on completely random shows from the entire archive, 6,600 shows. And set up a chat room very similar to the one I set up for the Night Station. So the idea is that you can come into this chat room, and it's onsug.com/saloon. And you can chat and listen to what you're listening to is what everyone else is listening to, which is just a completely random shows from the archive. It's an experiment because I don't know. You can't really tell from a few days, but over the long haul, completely random. Is that going to work? Is that our shows? Are they better suited to random access? That is, you listen to it, you can fast forward, you can skip, or is it okay to listen to the whole shows? That remains to be seen. This is an experiment. But come into the saloon and chat. Me and PQ and Mike Booty have been in there a lot. In fact, Brazen Gestures was just in there very briefly. He was on vacation in Portugal. It's fascinating. It's, you know, and I think it sort of remains to be seen if this is the right way to go, but this is just an experiment. But I have to say that this morning I was listening and a show came up. It was one of the very early, it was the fifth over Nightscape Central. And just to give you a comparison, later on today the 244th over Nightscape Central will be broadcast. This is a show called Over Nightscape Central Predictions and Movies from December 27th, 2010. So 4.5 years ago. So here's what the description says. Predictions for 2011 and or films that should be seen are the topics on this extra special edition of Over Nightscape Central. As PQ Ribber is joined in the studio by the elusive other two-thirds of the Conspiracy of the Insignificant, Dr. Panasofsky, and Fruitcake Toothpaste, Brian Jude, Bob Lament, Manny the Mailman, Frank Nora, Simon from Nevada as Cinnabar Sam, Wayne Reichert and Chad of Chadcast, with special bumpers from Eddie from Ireland, The Trampler. All this and next week's topic. Listen and join the fun. So I was really fascinated by this episode. It was wild, man. It was PQ sitting around with these two other guys. Very interesting atmosphere. These bizarre bumpers by Eddie from Ireland, currently of Cloudbase 44. Including like a weird leprechaun guy. And some people that we haven't heard from in a long time. I mean, Brian Jude, we haven't heard from him in a long time. Bob Lament, of course, he's still doing the morning commute. Manny the Mailman doesn't really do a show anymore. He's done a few shows over the years recently, and I just met up with him last week. Right? Frank Nora. Simon from Nevada, who we haven't really heard from very much, but he just texted me the other day. Today, in fact. Wayne Reichert, we haven't heard from in a while. He moved to upstate New York. He got into the whole religion thing a bit, and I don't know if he's ever coming back. Hopefully he will. And Chad from Chadcast, who I just met up with about a month ago. This is a really interesting show, especially predictions for 2011. Who even remembers what happened in 2011 at this point? We're in 2015. But I wanted to play you my selection there. It's about 15 minutes long. I was very interested in my what I said 4.5 years ago. Sort of a different tone and some very interesting predictions and movies that you could check out. So I'll listen along with you as we check out my... this has never been broadcast on the Overnight Scape, only on the Overnight Scape Underground on the Central. Here's me from 4.5 years ago. Check it out. Calling Overnight Scape Central. Come in, Overnight Scape Central. Hi, this is Frank Nora, host of the Frank Nora Show, here on the Overnight Scape Underground. Ah, yes, another Overnight Scape Central segment. Oh, yes. Oh, I'm freezing. I'm walking up 8th Avenue here in New York City. It's a very chilly morning. So the topics for this week, and by the way, I hope everyone had a lovely holiday season, Christmas, or however you celebrate. I hope you had a great, because this is coming out after Christmas, right? Yeah, yeah. The topics today, predictions for 2011, and also movies that may people may not have seen that they should. So, I was thinking about predictions of the future, and I'm like, you know, I could think about it, try to predict stuff, but you know what I decided to do? I was sitting on the bus, and I decided I was going to actually try and clear my mind and really, truly peer into the future. Like, try to, like, predict things, like actual premonitions. So I did, and I had these visions, and I just wrote everything down. I'm going to let you know. Here are my predictions for 2011. Some of them are quite shocking. Okay? We'll see if any of them come true. Okay, here we go. Wow, a lot of them. Here we go. My first prediction is that Apple, you know, the computer company, will release a some sort of wearable computer, a wearable iOS device that will have something to do with television. They're going to call it like a new kind of TV. Maybe you wear it like a around your wrist, or you know what I mean, maybe it's like a magic shirt you wear. I don't know. It's going to be like, imagine it could be like a shirt that has a TV on it. It's going to be something like a wearable computer. That's one prediction. I just saw these things in my mind. Another thing would be the, you know, as I talked about recently, the Freedom Tower, the new World Trade Center, will be big news as it rises up above the skyline. Ah, it's too cold out here. There will be, unfortunately, I saw a new financial crash, and Barack Obama. Ah, it's too windy. Oh my God. Barack Obama will be faced with a huge scandal, and it'll be like a huge Barack Obama scandal. In other news, in 2011, another prediction. Oh my God, it is horribly cold out here. I can't take it. I'm going to go over to Times Square. It's too windy on 8th Avenue. I see a new green puppet becoming extremely popular. A brand new puppet character that's green, and they're going to be calling it like the new Kermit. You know, it's something that we don't know about yet. It's going to be a new green puppet that's, I don't know, a TV show, a movie, whatever, will be extremely popular. I also see there's going to be a new kind of sport, kind of like the wacky races in real life. It'll be sort of like NASCAR, but there'll be very weird cars. The cars will all be weird shapes and themes and things. So like a real life wacky races. And kind of similar, there's going to be a shocking new luxury cruise, which will be like like the Hindenburg or those old Zeppelins. It'll be a Zeppelin submarine, a Zeppamine. A sublimetzeblimin. How would you say it? It's sort of a Zeppelin, a combination of a Zeppelin and a submarine. It'd be this huge, gigantic, like a cruise ship-sized blimp or Zeppelin that's completely underwater. And you go there, and you have these like luxury rooms, and you can look out and see the octopuses and stuff. That'll be good. Some of these predictions may be more likely than others. What else? What else did I predict here? Very shocking. Tom Selleck will come back and have a huge revival of his career in a movie about humanoid cats. That's a strange one. Of course, there will be a royal wedding. Prince William marrying, whatever her name is, Princess Catherine. But there'll be some sort of difficulty surrounding it, and Queen Elizabeth might, either die or get sick and have to give up the throne. And then Charles will give it up. And the idea is that William will become king next year. That will be King William next year. Another prediction. I also predict that in China, there'll be some sort of unrest, almost like a civil war in China. And that
There'll be big problems in Little China. There'll be big problems in China. Parts of China will be like in open revolt. What the hell's going on out here? It's frigid. Oh my God, it's just hard. I may have to go underground. I can't take it out here. This is ridiculous. It's a friggin' like gale force wind. I think I'm gonna go to the subway. I can't take this. And other predictions, there will be a new technology to draw images on the sky. This has been the subject of many conspiracy theories, but yes, they will be able to use lasers or holograms or whatever, and that they'll be able to draw images on the sky. It's very shocking. Shit. Something will be discovered under the ice of the North Pole, right? Somewhere, a U.S. government laboratory will implode, and there will be rumors of time travel technology being related. There will be a story or a movie or something about a secret highway. That will be quite popular. Over the summer, the internet worldwide will crash. The entire internet is going to like be unavailable for like 2 or 3 days. It's going to be this huge thing, and people are going to be like stunned, and it's going to be like a big disaster. Like, imagine the entire internet's down for like 2.5 days. It's going to be big, I'm telling you. People will have to rethink their lives, how much they've become dependent upon the internet. And very sad news, and I really double-checked this prediction. I didn't even want to say it, but Steve Jobs of Apple Computer will die. I know I don't like Apple, but I don't want to see the guy die. I felt very sad about that he's going to die. But yeah, Steve Jobs, I mean, obviously he looks very unhealthy. He has all sorts of health problems, but he will die. And that'll be one of the big stories of the year. Steve Jobs dies. There will be some sort of countdown clock that will become very popular. I can't really see what it is. It's not for the new year. It's just some sort of countdown clock. There will be an underground cinema complex that will be very luxurious. Giant theaters in the old style of those old theaters, those giant movie palaces. It'll be all underground, and people can live there. It's going to be this thing. I don't know if it's going to be part of a movie or if it's going to be real. Underground cinema complex where people live. And finally, there will be a radical redesign of U.S. currency announced. It won't be released in 2011, but it'll be announced. The money will look completely different. There are my predictions. I honestly was not expecting this kind of weather out here. Now, let us check out some movies that you may not have seen. Holy God, I can't take it. This is pretty shocking. I was thinking about it this morning, and all these movies that came to mind that you may not have seen, but you should definitely check out. Let's just get right into it. First movie, Primer. Primer, oh my God, you want to talk about time travel. Probably one of the best time travel movies ever, one of the best sci-fi movies ever. Very low budget, not very well known. It's about these two guys who invent a time machine, and it's very realistic. Great movie, very hard to wrap your mind around. See, one thing that happened this year was, like, Inception was this big thing where everyone thought it was all complex. Inception's not complex. Primer is massively more complex in terms of its plot than Inception. Another movie that I haven't seen... My hands are, like, numb at this point. Hold on.
Okay.
Oh, finally. Ow! Ow! Like, my hands are, like, messed up from this cold. Ow! Jesus. Another movie that I haven't... I haven't seen in a while, but I remembered it recently. It was a movie called The Dark Backwards. Judd Nelson plays a failing comedian who grows an arm out of his back and becomes popular, and Bill Paxton's in the movie as well. It's kind of a dystopian world. Check out The Dark Backwards with Judd Nelson. That was a really good movie. Another one, Twice Upon a Time, an animated movie using a very interesting animation technique, which, I forget, it was made in the early 80s, but it was like never properly released. You could find it online, though. A really interesting movie. Twice Upon a Time. How about Shock Treatment? It's another movie. It's basically sort of the sequel to the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I think it is criminally undervalued. I think it's one of the best movies ever made. I love it. The music is great. Everything about it is great. It is sort of like, to me, the ultimate sort of cult underground movie that people don't know about. So check out Shock Treatment. Another movie, Kinjaja, or Kinzaza. This is maybe one of the, of all the movies on this list, this might be the one that's the most important for you to see. Kinzaza, I talked about it on the show a couple years ago. KIN-DZA-DZA, a Russian movie from 1986, a science fiction movie about these two guys that get transported to an alternate reality. What an utterly amazing movie. I saw it on, I think, on Google Video with subtitles. You got to check this movie out. Kinjaja, Kinzaza, whatever. It's a great film. Amazing. Let me pause for a moment as I'm on the subway here.
Shuttle train to the east side of 42nd Street, Grand Central Station. Step all the way in, stand clear to closing doors, please.
All right, here we are. Man, I can't believe how cold it was out there before. I feel like traumatized from it. Like, it must have been like 0 degrees with the wind chill. It's ridiculous. Anyway, let's move on with movies here. There's a movie called The Room, which is sort of a new cult film. Sort of so bad it's good, but it really is so bad that it's good. Look up The Room. It's this guy who never really was never known before. I forget his name, but he's like, "You are tearing me apart, Lisa." And then another line is, "Oh, hi, Mark." You just gotta see the movie. It's good. I can definitely see how it could become a cult classic, The Room. Another movie that I really think everyone should see is called A Texas Tale of Treason. Very obscure movie. Basically, you know, one of my favorite movies of all time is Repo Man, but that's not an obscure movie, but from 84, with Emilio Estevez. Well, this guy Alex Cox made the movie, and he actually wrote a sequel. So these people in Texas asked Alex Cox for permission to make the sequel, and he let them. And this movie is all about their attempt to make this movie called Waldo's Hawaiian Holiday, I think. The disaster that happened and how this guy Alex Cox screwed them over. So that's a good movie to see. I think that's online. Another great movie to see, of course, is Starbucking. It's about a guy named Winter who's trying to visit every Starbucks in the world. It's a great movie. Partially because, yours truly, Frank Nora, I am in the movie, yes. And that's how I got in IMDb and everything else. I am in the movie as playing myself. Thank you. Another movie I saw recently, it's available on Hulu, is called We Live in Public. And it was about the internet pioneers, you know, the internet millionaires during the dot-com craze. And how talk about an underground bunker. He built an underground bunker for people to live and filmed them 24 hours a day. It was like this whole thing on the internet. I don't really remember that happening at the time, but it's a fascinating movie about a really messed up person. And how can we forget The Wizard of Speed and Time? This, another one. This is one of probably, again, the most criminally undervalued movies of all time. You may have seen this guy's work. If you just look up The Wizard of Speed and Time by Mike Jitlov, you'll find this like short 5-minute movie that's really cool. But people don't know, he made a feature film, which is sort of the story of his life. He's an animator, he's trying to make it in Hollywood, he gets completely and utterly screwed over in the movie and in real life. And then he sort of like recedes into the background. It's very sad. I actually emailed him once. I posted something of his a while back, a readme file from his font. And who can forget The Money Masters? A great movie online you can watch about the financial system. I've recommended the movie so many times on my shows, and I would simply add the caveat, I think it's good information, but I don't think it addresses the issue of false scarcity economies or post-scarcity economies, so I would criticize it in that regard, but it's definitely a must-see movie. Here's a movie that you probably can't see. It's called What Is It? Right? It's a movie by Crispin Glover. It's not out on video. I don't think it's even available to pirate. It's only available as Crispin Glover, the actor, tours around the country showing it at various movie theaters. So it's a very bizarre movie with a Down syndrome cast. I talked about it recently, but What Is It? It's a pretty wild movie, but I don't think it's a great movie, but it's interesting. The fact that you can't see it at all is amazing. And finally, just one that came to mind was The Apple from 1980. Another film that sort of, there was a short-lived Rocky Horror type craze with these weird musicals, weird rock musicals. The Apple, I know it's been gaining traction recently. It's just a weird movie about sort of a futuristic society. This guy, Mr. Boogaloo, is sort of like Satan. And these two young kids, a guy and a girl, that are going to become famous. Just see The Apple. It's a good movie. Well, there you go, my five-minute segment in 15 minutes. Well, anyway, I feel better now. Now I got to go outside again. It's going to be cold. It's going to be freezing. I don't know about that. We're in City, Citigroup. No, this is the MetLife building, the former Pan Am building. Yeah. It's always a weird feeling in this place, some weird energy. Anyway, there you go. Thank you, everyone, for indulging my 15-minute escapade. And now back to the rest of the activities on the Overnightscape Underground. Overnightscape Central, that is. Come on, man, wake up. Come on, Frank, wake up!
Yeah, wake up. Wake up, wake up. Come on, Rob, wake up. Hello? 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 I still haven't really woken up. I do have to wake up, man. I don't know what's going on with me. How'd you like that segment from 4.5 years ago? That was really interesting, you know. Talk about a long, strange trip. The Overnightscape Underground has been this long, strange trip. Talk about a lot of those movies. Yeah, I guess that was the big year of Inception, 2010. That movie annoyed me that everyone was so confused by it. I didn't think it was confusing. Primer, I still meant to watch that again. I saw it on Netflix the other day. Really good time travel movie. And Kinzaza, that Russian movie about these guys going to another dimension. I found it again. Google Video obviously is no more, but it is on YouTube. It's in Russian, but you can turn on the closed captioning and watch Kinzaza. It's a really good movie. I meant to watch that again, too. The Room, I think, has sort of receded into obscurity. You're tearing me apart, Lisa. Oh, hi, Mark. I haven't really heard much about that movie. It was more of a 2010 thing, I guess. Texas Tale of Treason. Really interestingly, one of PQ's friends who was on this episode, Dr. Panasofsky or Fruitcake Toothpaste, one of them, was actually in this movie, or was going to be in this movie. Texas Tale of... not Texas Tale of Treason, but he was going to be in Waldo's Hawaiian Holiday. He knew some of the people that were involved in it. That blew my mind. I didn't realize it at the time, and they didn't comment on it. They should have. Commented on, like right then, like they commented on me being really cold, and they commented on some of the predictions. But one of those guys, I think PQ, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of them was in the movie. Shouldn't they have mentioned it? Maybe they weren't listening carefully enough. Starbucking is the movie that I'm in about the guy going to every Starbucks in the world, and you know. It just goes to show you, being in a movie doesn't necessarily give you a lot of publicity. You know. The movie's still out there, I suppose, but I never heard anything about it anymore. We Live in Public. Yeah, I remember that whole thing. The dot-com age, like late 90s, early 2000s, this weird guy. In fact, I think that on that show Silicon Valley... There was a guy that invented radio on the internet who's this real jerky billionaire guy. I think the guy in this movie, We Live in Public, he's the guy that invented, like, video on the internet or something. He made, like, millions with a very early internet company about video. I forget the name of it. But the movie We Live in Public, and this sort of shows you how movies are kind of a touchstone. They persist where other forms of media don't persist. It's really interesting. A movie persists. Like, you could look up We Live in Public and maybe find a copy of it. Yeah, it was this guy who was a very disturbed individual. He made millions. What was it? Sudo.com was the name of his website. Who even remembers that now? He liked to... If I'm not mistaken, he had a... his alter ego was this weird clown named Lovey. And he was meeting with, like, real business people, investors, and he would, like, some days he would just show up as his regular self, sometimes he would show up as Lovey the Clown. But yeah, he set up this bunker for people to live, and he filmed them 24 hours a day, and going to the bathroom, having sex, everything, being naked, everything. It was like this bizarre thing, a guy that briefly had all this money, and then eventually, I guess, he just sort of, like, dropped out of the scene. I remember in the movie he was like living in Massachusetts or something on a farm. You know, that's the last anyone ever heard of him. And of course, the Wizard of Speed and Time. Just, you know, I always wish that guy Mike Jitloff would come back and do something. And, you know, I feel the same thing. I feel like I've had a lot of ideas. I've had a lot of creative whatever, but it felt like a lot of it has been ignored or rejected by the public, and that bitterness that you feel, and you kind of just drop out of the scene. I have not succumbed to that yet. I'm still doing these shows to largely the same, you know, environment, just sort of being ignored or not putting in the effort to get it seen. It's probably more likely the case, or maybe it's not as good as I think it is, and I'm just, you know, whatever. Again, self-pity, blah. Finally, The Money Masters. I have not watched that movie in a long time. There's a lot of conspiracy videos out there, but I would say that, you know, my view on conspiracy theories has evolved over time. I certainly don't follow the Alex Joneses and David Icke's. Is David Icke even still around? I haven't heard from him in years. I suppose they are. But The Money Masters is about the Federal Reserve and the whole fractional reserve banking, which is still very relevant. I mean, just this past week we had this sort of... the country of Greece is sort of... run out of money, and it owes money to these banks and things, and it's this whole thing. It is really good to know about it, though I would say that, as I mentioned there, I wouldn't think of this information in a vacuum. I mean, it's part of a larger situation, but The Money Masters, maybe there's better movies out there now, to just understand what the Federal Reserve is. This is not a conspiracy theory. When you find out what it is, for real, you'll be kind of outraged and confused. It clearly is a major component of the elite stratum of our society, of our world, controlling the masses via this fictional concept of quote-unquote money. Also, I wouldn't necessarily condemn it. I don't know what their reasoning is. I mean, it could be wrong, it could be right, it could be a mix of the two. But I would still would say that understanding fractional reserve banking, which basically, I mean, without really getting into it now, is quite counterintuitive and not what you thought it was, if you don't know about it. Again, I don't really see people really caring about it that much anymore. It's really weird. It's 2015 already, and I don't know what's happened. But the earlier part of that recording actually had a lot of interesting predictions, of course, only one of which came true, which is that Steve Jobs did die in October of 2011, though he was looking very unwell, so that was not really that much of a stretch to predict that. It seems like every time we do these prediction shows, I always predict that Queen Elizabeth will die, but she never does. She persists on. Now, back then in 2010, I was doing the Frank Norris show. That was part of the hiatus for the Overnightscape. Well, in 2011, I didn't predict it, but the Overnightscape came back. Pretty much in title only. The Frank Norris show was pretty much the same show as this. I did talk about Apple releasing a wearable piece of technology that was sort of related to a TV, which sounds a little bit like the Apple Watch, but not too much, though. The Freedom Tower, One World Trade Center, of course, I just visited about a month ago, finally opened to the public. So, it took a while. The new green puppet, not really didn't happen, but there was Ted. When did the first Ted movie come out? But the living teddy bear, it was a few years later. The real-life wacky races, that would have been great. I don't think that happened. The giant Zeppelin submarine, that definitely didn't happen. That would have been cool. Tom Selleck did make a comeback, I think, in a TV show called Blue Bloods. I think I saw one episode of that, about a family of cops. Though it had nothing to do with humanoid cats. Drawing images on the sky, no, that hasn't happened. A movie about a secret highway, I don't know. I mean, there was something, I think it was subsequent to this that I read the Dark Tower books by Stephen King, and it's something about a secret highway, sort of. One thing I really liked a lot was the underground cinema complex. I like this idea that, you know, you recreate in this underground complex those ancient movie halls of old, those giant movie theaters they used to have with one giant screen and beautiful ornate ceiling, and, you know, it was like a lot of those, and then you could live there. So you live there, and you just go see movies all the time in these grand old movie palaces. That's an interesting idea, you know. U.S. currency having a new design. No, even though they recently said they're going to put a woman on the $10 bill. That's not really a huge change, but anyway, there's the a blast from the past, if you so say. That was really, it's kind of cool, a big blast from the past. So, yeah. In other news, I finally found a shampoo that I think is kind of cool. Dove Men Plus Care. So, you know, when it comes to any kind of products that can be girly, you know, like cosmetics or, you know, personal grooming products, it seems like there's a whole aspect where men are very uncomfortable using products that are that could be considered girly. And so the companies make male-oriented products. Like, for example, here, Dove Men Plus Care. It's always, they always use a very, like a gunmetal gray color to reassure men that they're not feminine using this product. So I have a bottle of the shampoo here. This is the Fortifying Shampoo and Conditioner Fresh Clean 2-in-1 with caffeine and menthol. That's what sold me. Very manly. Removes grease and revitalizes. So menthol and caffeine. Caffeinated shampoo. It smells pretty good, too. I just used this the last couple days. Now, I remember the whole idea of caffeinated soap where this the caffeine can absorb through your skin and give you a bit of a caffeine buzz. I'm not sure if it goes through your scalp quite that much. Here's the marketing copy on the back. Smoky barbecues, muddy fields, a hot day, men relax their way. Fresh Clean helps hair recover from all that action. It has menthol to refresh while it washes away dirt and grease. Your hair will be ready and more chilling out. Man-proof your hair with caffeine and menthol. Hair will be ready for more chilling out. It's kind of a weird sentence. Man-proof your hair from Unilever. They have kind of a cool logo, a little objects in their logo. So yeah, like the last man-oriented shampoo I got was Old Spice, and it was vile. It smelled like rotten. Something was rotten in there. This one has a much more just laid-back scent, you know. Smells a little bit like a almost like a citronella candle, kind of that kind of smell. I could swear when I was a kid, and we in the 80s, we went out to Montana. There was a smell like this in the air. It's bringing it all back to me in the summer of 80 in Montana. Montana 1980. You can hear some of the tapes on the archive here. So I used it. I don't know. It's the menthol kind of feels cold on your skin, you know? You don't want to get it in your eyes. Menthol, I guess just mint oil. Mint oil. But anyway, it's kind of a cool. I've just been using the neither male nor female Fructis. Garnier Fructis, which could be a little bit on the girly side. I'm not that hung up on that stuff, though. I have to admit, I'm a little hung up on it. I don't want to, like, take a product meant for women for my hair. I want either a neutral one or one meant for men. I know, all these gender issues, whatever. What do y'all want? What do y'all want? In other news, a little update from that last episode where I was hung out with Dadaist, Matt from Scotland, and Manny the Mailman. And we went to this Cake Boss Cafe in Hoboken, which I had never really heard of. I mean, I've heard of the show. And we got cannolis, which is sort of a deep-fried shell, sort of in a tube shape, and it's stuffed with a kind of a cream. And I ate one. And then afterwards, my wife, who watches the show, my wife Denise, said that those cannolis are made with lard. So I ate animal matter. Ugh, it wasn't vegetarian. Ugh. There's nothing I could do about it because I did it in the past. I can't change it. Or could we change the past? I don't know. So the cannoli was probably full of lard, though I'm not 100% sure. Talking about Apple, they released Apple Music just this past week. Their own take on Spotify. And, you know, I don't really have any Apple products, and I have Spotify. I don't really pay for the premium version. It's not really something that I need at this point. But in conjunction with Apple Music, they announced Beats One Radio, which was a worldwide streaming radio station. So basically, it's one station whenever anyone tunes in anywhere in the world, they're hearing the same thing. And they have studios in London, New York, and Los Angeles, where they're broadcasting live, talking about the latest music, playing songs, interviewing the stars and stuff. And I've been listening on and off the past week or so, and I kind of like the idea of it a lot. It really reminds me of, you know, listening to the radio, or especially watching MTV. There's something about the idea of this communal experience where everyone is hearing the same thing. And, you know, there's the DJs, especially the guy in London, I forget his name, he's like, coming up next, they're going to drop the new one from such and such, and they're going to all listen to this, you know. Very enthusiastic and kind of corny, but at the same time, there's something about that, the sort of commanding voice, that you know that Apple is such a huge company that they command this global audience and everyone's hearing the same thing. There's something very interesting about that. And I do like that. Even though that might seem to be going in the wrong direction for the world, there's something about it, like one voice, one for one world. It's definitely been very interesting. It was recently I've been listening, and there haven't been as much. It's been much more fractured. And you had sort of like Jaden Smith, Will Smith's son, doing a show, and he's talking to his father. It's almost sort of like a whole Starfucker kind of thing where they're more celebrity worship than actually about the music. But they have been playing some, you know, older songs, 80s songs and stuff, and some new music. I don't know. I guess some of the programming I've liked, some I haven't, but it's an interesting idea. How I have to listen to it is, on my computer, I have Windows 7, and I have refused to update my iTunes because the newer versions deleted certain features that I need for my OnSug organizational stuff. But the other computer, which is right behind it, has an updated iTunes, so I have to run like a wire to that other computer, hit play, and then this little portable speaker kind of unit, MP3 player thing, I got at Micro Center years ago. I can just turn it on and listen to Beats One Radio. It's interesting. I guess that might have been what inspired the OnSug Saloon. And by the way, a saloon, you think about an Old West bar where people are cracking each other over the head with bottles, playing poker and whatever, you know, like the saloon. But saloon just means salon. It's a place set aside for a certain activity. Sort of like that in France in the 1800s, there were these salons where the intellectuals would get together and talk and stuff. Saloon, salon, whatever. I find myself listening to Beats One Radio less and less, but it is an interesting idea, though. Oh my God, there's a fly that's like stuck in. Can you believe this fly is stuck in my beer? Let me try to help the fly out. Get out of my beer. I don't want to kill the poor thing. A little green miniature fly stuck in the foam. Now he's on my pen. Get out of the beer. All right, I think he's going to be all right. Get out of here. I'll let him dry off and fly away. Yeah, he's doing all right. All right. Fly away. Fly away. Ooh, he got off. Okay, great. You're all right. Dry off. Fly. He's drying off. How about the wings? Are you okay? Fly. He's rubbing his hands together in the front. Bugs. All right, whatever. Finally, I saw the movie Terminator Genesis. The latest movie in the Terminator saga, which of course started around 84-ish with the movie The Terminator. Hello. How you doing? Then, of course, the high point of the entire series, the entire thing, was Terminator 2 in 1991. Just an absolute, pretty much a perfect movie, the perfect time. What an amazing film. Everyone was quoting it. Everyone loved it. This was 1991. The Guns N' Roses songs. You could be mine, but you're way out of line. With your bitch slap rapping and your cocaine tongue, you get nothing done. You know, the music video, which was Terminator related. You know, Terminator was in the, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger was in the movie. The music video. Wow. The Pinball Machine. And just, it was just a pop culture phenomenon. Then Terminator, I don't know. I mean, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines was much later. I don't even remember when that was. It was kind of an eh movie. Terminator Salvation, just a few years ago with Christian Bale, was not good in my opinion. And it was interesting because the TV show, when was that? 2004, 2006, whenever that was. I love the TV show, Terminator, Sarah Connor Chronicles. Really great show with Summer Glau as Cameron the Terminator. Shirley Manson from the band Garbage also playing a T-1000 Terminator. Mimetic Palialoi, Liquid Metal. I loved the TV show. So basically, for me, Terminator 2 was great. I like Terminator. Terminator 2 was huge. And then I loved the TV show. I just love that world of Terminator. Then, of course, there was... I did actually see it down at Universal theme park in Florida. They had a Terminator, like, 3D movie with a T-1 million... and what's great about Terminator is that every time they go back in time, they create new timelines so that the new movies don't have to be remakes, they're just new timelines. So, basically, when they announced the cancellation of the TV show, that was the same week that the movie came out, Terminator Salvation, which is just not good. So, it kind of the Terminator thing died back then, but I had to guess 2004. Why guess? Let's try Google. Okay, Google. Okay, Google. What year did Terminator Salvation come out? It's recognizing my voice. It's failing. It's not. It's like. Oh, it got it though. Eventually, it wrote down. It wrote it down exactly as I said it. I think my internet connection here is very poor, that's why. Can't load results. Retry. What year did Terminator Salvation come out? I'm sure those of you in the future are appalled by how hard it is to get a simple answer from a computer. Okay, Google. What year did Terminator Salvation come out? Do I not have internet? What's going on here?
Was released in United States of America on May 21st, 2009.
Thank you. That's what a computer's supposed to say. Honestly, this idea that you can just talk out loud and your phone will answer you in voice, really amazing technology. It's really coming along. It's just, you have to have a good connection, and half the places you are, physically, there's not a good connection. Anyway, 2009. Yeah, that was not that long ago. The show was canceled. And the movie came out, and that was kind of it. So, when I found out that there was going to be a new movie, I was pretty excited. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger became the governor of California, and then he was no longer the governor of California. His term was up, and he's back to making movies. There was a trailer for the new Terminator, I think last year, teaser trailer, and it looked good. You know, the idea that the Terminator went further back in time and now similar to the way that John Connor in Terminator 2 had a father-son relationship with the Terminator, now as subsequent timelines began to get more muddled, a T-800 Terminator Arnold goes back in time to 1973 and now Sarah Connor has a daughter-father relationship to a Terminator. Seemed good. Then the first full trailer came out, and that trailer basically revealed the entire movie from beginning to end and showed that the movie was going to be bad. And so I went to see it without much expectation. I love Terminator. I didn't look at Rotten Tomatoes, where apparently at that point it had only 25%, which is really bad. So I saw Terminator Genesis. And I have to say, I felt it was just okay. I enjoyed it. I would give it a very, very mild thumbs up personally. I liked it. But then again, I like the Terminator world. I like the whole concept of the time travel, the robots, everything else. And this movie was definitely much more in the James Cameron realm. It was much more similar to Terminator 1 and 2. In fact, it took place during some of the scenes were exact same scenes of Terminator 1, but in a new timeline. So they go to 84, and then they go to 2017, blah, blah, blah. The movie, it feels like they want to throw everything but the kitchen sink at there. So there's every kind of Terminators, there's all kind of time travel, there's all kind of fight scenes. The movie, quite honestly, is a big mess. But in bits and pieces, it works, it's interesting. But overall, I cannot say that it's a good movie, and I would only give it the barest of positive reviews. I did like it more. I liked it more than Mad Max, which I know everyone loves Mad Max. I know that whole thing. But it was, I mean, I wouldn't say it was disappointing because I didn't expect very much. Emilia Clarke as Sarah Connor was quite good. I do find her quite lovely. She's a very attractive woman. And she's an Australian actress, I think, or New Zealand or something. She got the accent down perfect. She talked just like Linda Hamilton in the first two movies. She sounded exactly. She got that accent and the dialogue down perfect. And she did a good job, you know. I mean, it in a movie where the script was, you know, kind of off. You know, she had pretty good chemistry with Arnold Schwarzenegger. The main problem was the script itself, which was it got to the point with the timelines that things just were not making sense at all. You know, things were not making sense. Matt Smith, who played Doctor Who, of course, had a very minor role in the movie. It was almost like stunt casting. It was really unnecessary for him to be in the movie. Someone had to play that role, but it didn't need to be him. But it does seem that he's going to be, if there's a sequel, which they already greenlit all these sequels, even though this movie is not doing very well, apparently he's going to be in it. The guy that plays Kyle Reese, Jay Courtney, I guess is his name, not a huge fan of that guy. He doesn't have that same sort of empty stare that was Michael Biehn, was that guy's name, who was in the original Terminator. He's lacking something of the quality of that person. Of course, it's interesting to note that Sarah Connor, you know, Emilia Clarke plays Daenerys Targaryen in Game of Thrones, a queen. Now, Lena Headey also plays Queen Cersei, who also was Sarah Connor in the TV show Sarah Connor Chronicles. So it's so funny that two queens from Game of Thrones have also been Sarah Connor. I really think they should bring Linda Hamilton into Game of Thrones as a queen. That would really complete the whole cycle, you know. I'm not sure if Linda... I don't even know what's going on with this. Is Linda Hamilton even around anymore? Whatever happened to her? And Arnold Schwarzenegger is in there, and, you know, he's okay. I mean, his whole shtick is that he's always been kind of a bad actor, so he's always playing like a robot or something, and he has a new shtick, which is that he smiles and it's okay. You know, and it's, you know, talking about the timelines, you must mate with Kyle Reese. Stop talking about me mating with Kyle Reese. Like I said, there's good ideas in there. There's throwbacks to the first movie, basically. It's just an unbelievable mess. An unbelievable mess. The story doesn't make any sense, and it's like this super trope of going into a complex and placing explosive charges. Oh, my dear Lord, how many times have we been down that road before? You know, this is a spoiler, but whatever. John Connor is also a Terminator now. He's a new kind of Terminator where it has, like, sort of carbon molecules in him and whatever. It's sort of... That whole storyline was kind of stupid. Genesis is trying to be like a commentary on all of our dependence on iPhones and stuff, and felt like a very two or three years ago kind of sentiment, sort of criticizing everyone's looking at their phone. We get it. It's, please. Sort of like 2011 called, they want their concept back. I don't know. You know, people like complain about an image of everyone sitting around looking at their phone, like I get it. People are upset with that, but that's just the current reality, and it'll change soon too. Whatever. There'll be a new technology. What do you want? As soon as that Google stuff gets better, where you can just talk to your computer, you don't have to look at a screen so much. Kind of like in the movie Her, which is a great movie. You should check that out. So, yeah, I was kind of underwhelmed by Terminator, and it's just, it's hard to pin down. It's sort of like, you know, there's some movies where you can sort of see that there was a good movie in there somewhere. In this case, I don't even know that there was a good movie in there somewhere. It's just that it's like a checklist of stuff that you want to put in a movie. But being in Terminator land, once again, is fun. You're in Terminator world for like 2 hours. I like being in Terminator world. I like that genre. But I would give it only the most slight thumbs up as a film. Yeah, I actually went to see it on one of these unemployed weekdays walking. I actually can walk to a movie theater from here, which is pretty cool, about a 15-minute walk. Just go there in the middle of the afternoon. There's, like, no one there. It's very, very apocalyptic and depressing to do that, let alone all the apocalypses in the movie itself. Now, what do you want? Movies are so disappointing. But because of the Grateful Dead last night, I did not see the third episode of True Detective, which I'm very much looking forward to, because the second episode was really great. I do love the True Detective. Good show. HBO finally came up with a good show. Well, they have a lot of good shows, but then they have a lot of hits and a lot of misses. So, True Detective. Good stuff. Yeah. Well, I haven't heard anything about that job applied to today. They usually call back the same day if there's any sort of traction on it, so I don't know what to say. I got to get a job soon here. I mean, I'm like, you know, it's been just like 2 months now. Oh, wait a second. Yeah, tomorrow will be the official 2 month mark of my unemployment, which if it only does, if I get a job tomorrow, 2 months is not that bad, but this is like the beginning of a longer stretch. I don't know, man. I'm feeling kind of messed up about this. I really am. I don't have to say. I know me and everyone else in this society, everything is all screwed up. As much as I want to talk about the Federal Reserve this and all these theories and conspiracy theories and other worlds and everything else, I also have to live in the real world and deal with the normal world, which is a big drag. It's Dragsville, Dad. You know? The world is Dragsville, Dad. Daddy-o. Say. Thanks so much for patching in. I do so appreciate it. Here on the Overnight Skate porch. I think it's one of the few podcasts that has its own porch. Maybe not. Anyways, here you go. Let's now head on over to a little place I like to call The Other Side.
is unreal. Hey, you've got to hear this. Just listen to this car stereo. The power's incredible. Oh, feel that bass. The highs are so clear. And that's the FM. Just wait till you hear how fantastic Sanio makes my cassette sound. His Sanio's unbelievable. Auto reverse, metal tape.
The great sound of Sanio car stereo brings people together for the better life. Sanio!
We hope you've enjoyed tonight's showcase, Rosemary's Baby. Stay tuned for Newsmakers with Walter Jacobson coming up next.
I'm waiting. We were going to play our little game.
Oh, I have to work late.
You promised to play Mastermind. I try to break your code, you try to break mine.
You'll have to play Mastermind without me.
Play Mastermind without you?
With new electronic Mastermind, you can play alone, honey. I already programmed in my secret code.
New electronic Mastermind by Invicta, a game of cunning and logic to play with others. Or alone.
I broke the code!
Such mastery!
You used to say that to me.
Bonnie Anderson co-hosts all next week at 3:30. Mourns for her deceased husband until
approaches its bicentennial, there seems to be a renewed interest in the relatively short history of the United States. You know, it's really incredible to think that just 200 years ago, this was a pretty wild, primitive land. And the dominant animal in our tradition was a huge, ugly, ill-tempered beast that roamed the plains of this nation 70 million strong. Bob will introduce you to some of them now.
These are American bison, commonly called buffalo. They're just about obsolete now. It's difficult to even find one on the back of a nickel. At one time, this animal was a vital part of our culture. The Indians hunted the buffalo both for food and for hides to make clothing. Then, in one of the less glorious chapters in America's past, both the Indians and the buffaloes were nearly exterminated to make way for progress. Buffaloes were slaughtered by the millions because they were important to the Indians, because they got in the way of the railroads, and because they were easy targets. By the turn of the century, there were only a few hundred buffaloes left in this country. Then, finally, some sensible people got together and saved the animal from complete extinction by passing some hunting laws and providing a few places where the buffaloes had some chance to multiply. Now, there are perhaps 33,000 of these animals in the United States. The government protects some of them, and private individuals are beginning to breed them. That's what's happening on Coon Creek Farm near Marengo, Illinois. The farm belongs to John and Lynn Banghart, and we went out there to find out more about it. They say they're in the process of fixing the farm up now. They have a small tree nursery, and for the past few months, they've also had four buffaloes. The idea is to raise and breed buffaloes here, and it's kind of a group project. A man named George Reed runs the neighboring farm. His two sons, Marvin and Paul, got interested in raising buffaloes as a project for their future Farmers of America activities. They wanted to work with an unusual breed of livestock, so they started collecting information about buffaloes. Then they discovered that John Banghart had been thinking along the same lines.
I had had an interest in buffalo for the past 2 years after a visit that I had made to Arizona, and shortly after that I had a conversation with my good neighbor George Reed and his boys, and they also had an interest and were anxious to breed the buffalo. So if it hadn't been for George and the boys, I probably would just still have an interest and not actually have some buffalo. But now we have what is the makings of an excellent herd over a period of time. We have a lot of interest between us as neighbors, and I think this can only be a very beneficial and productive thing for all of us. Both Marvin and Paul have worked hard and saved money to be able to invest in this project. And that while their father and I have had the privilege of working with them and participating, the two boys have made a sincere effort to contribute, and I think that's a credit to them. Our buffalo here are 17 months old. There are really two kinds of American bison, one known as the southern bison and one known as the northern bison, and you could not distinguish them to any great degree except that the southern buffalo tends to be a little bit smaller and a little bit lighter in color. The buffalo we have here are a rather dark brown color, and they are northern buffalo. Unlike cattle, the buffalo do eat the grass, almost as a regular diet. Cattle, on the other hand, really should be fed plenty of corn, soybean meal, etc. What we do, as far as feeding, is provide them with a good grass pasture area, and they will, incidentally, forage for feed throughout winter. And then to get them to be more at ease with us, because they are a wild animal, we give them a small amount of oats each day. Over and above that, we provide them with a salt lick, which is good for their general diet, and also a protein block, which contains minerals, vitamins, and protein, which is, of course, essential to growth. We're naturally concerned with the breeding stock as such. We hope to have calves a year from spring. Also, we are interested in having good meat available. So this is more or less what we try to do as far as a diet for them. But nature has provided them with just the need really for good grass, something that was, of course, very common to the United States in the early days. I think we should make every effort to continue to preserve the buffalo as part of America. And it's through young fellows like Paul and Marvin that this is possible. If it hadn't been for the private individuals who were willing to establish small buffalo herds, I don't believe that the government could have done the job that is being done today. It's certainly my hope that we can increase the size of our herd to 10 or 12 animals. I personally have just had a great thrill out of these animals. I get an exciting feeling looking at them because I think they're a wonderful part of this country. I think it's something that should be maintained for as long as we're here. You know, there is so much waste pasture land that farmers do not use these days. If every young farm boy had an interest in something like the buffalo and had two or three animals which they could tend in these waste areas, just think how much it would ease the meat situation. So it's a native thing to this country, it's a natural thing to this country, and we hope that we can do our part to keep that buffalo name in front of the public.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are cordially invited to the greatest gathering of North American puppets ever. Huge puppets, tiny puppets, cooking puppets, famous puppets, Punch and Judy puppets, political puppets, with continuous live shows and exhibitions. It's ceremony, it's history, it's culture, it's fun, and it's all happening at the Chicago Historical Society, Clark Street at North Avenue. Come, join the fun.
No strings attached.
I carried her over the water and laid her down under a tree where the culvers wide all day and all night, and the wind from every quarter sing agreeably. Sing agreeably. Sing agreeably. I put a gold ring on her finger and pressed her close to my heart, while the fish in the lake their snapshots take, and the thrill of the tree line swingers sing agreeably. Sing agreeably. Sing agreeably. Clouds are puffing out their gray warning. The house is creeping in, it's for a load. The tables and chairs, well, they say they're suitable prayers. While I'm packing my bags, I'm hearing voices. Let's sing agreeably. Sing agreeably. Sing agreeably. Thank you. computations rolled in, and honey, I'm losing my hair. All these failures are framed by the tears in my vein, and the rush of blood running up my head sings regrettably. Sings regrettably. Sings regrettably.
Like to read. My teacher gave me the Bad Times of Burma bomb line, and I can hardly wait to talk to her about what I've read so far.
What's your name?
It's Burma Baumlin. My name is Judy Miller. I have four brothers and two sisters. One's just a teeny baby, and I have a little daughter who shakes hands, rolls over, and jumps over a stick. And I have a lot of hamsters. What do you have? Don't you have anything? Yes, I have the biggest doll in the world.
Dear Mother, I'm in a lot of trouble, and I wish you were here. I told the lion stole a dummy. What am I gonna do? I'm in so much trouble.
You can find out what happens next by reading The Bad Times of Irma Baumlin. It's at your local library, along with a lot of other very good books.
Visit Chicago's Museum of Science and Industry.
For girls who go wrong, the last stop.
Well, somebody's just going to have to change the system.
Final resting place for society's ugly little secrets.
Get undressed. Everything off.
And a lady investigator is about to uncover a lot more than she bargained for.
I want my man.
Bad girls who never get a second chance. Now she's one of them.
Tassin's arranging it so you have an accident.
What are you doing to me?
Women in Chains. Next on 7.
No!
Look!
Don't you